Welcome to the Carefree Black Nerd Podcast, a conversation about representation in comics and related media. I am your host, Rain Coleman, and today we'll be discussing Lobo, an African American cowboy. Alrighty, so Lobo, we're going to start with Lobo, but before we get into Lobo's colorful history, make sure to hit me up on Twitter and on TikTok at Carefree Blurred, IG and YouTube at Carefree Black Nerd. Follow me down, over there on social medias, and use that hashtag CBN Pod when you're listening to this episode. Hit it up on the social medias, hit it up on the Twitters, and let's make this a conversation. Now, y'all, let's get into Lobo. Now, Lobo is a fictional Western comic book hero. He is listed as the medium's first African-American character to headline his own series. Lobo, very interesting. So, Lobo number one was back in December of 1965. It was the first comic book with an African-American star, and that cover was done by Tony Tallarico. We're going to get more into him in a bit. So this comic is published by Dell Comics. Now, let's do a quick detour and get into Dell Comics for a second. Now, Dell Comics is a comic book publishing arm of Dell Publishing. Now, this got its start in pulp magazines. If y'all remember those pulp magazines, it's like real inexpensive, like fiction magazines. These were published from like 1890 something through like the 1960s. And this derived from the cheap wood pulp paper that the magazines were printed on. And that's in contrast to like the magazines that you get with the glossy high quality paper. So that was the hugest difference there. Now, with Dell Comics under Dell Publishing, it published comics from 1929 to 1974. Now, at its peak, it was the most prominent and successful American company in said medium. Now, in 1953, Dell claimed to be the world's largest comics publishers, selling 26 million copies each month. Dell freaking Comics. So with Lobo, he has a very interesting and colorful history for someone who does not have a full run in the way that us comic book consumers see full runs today. Sparse technical things around him is that he was published through Dell Comics. He first appeared in Lobo number one, that was in December of 1965, and he was created by Don DJ Arneson and Tony Tallarico. So his abilities, his special powers, is that he is an excellent marksman, which that makes sense. Like, for those of you who are like really in love with Westerns or just like them or like them enough to have seen more than one or two, you know that being an excellent marksman in Western times, Western setting, is pretty much like being an Avenger. So he was super powered. Now, when we go to the publication history, there is going to be a bit of drama. And before getting into that, I want to state right now, what does Lobo look like? Looking at the cover of this book, he is a tall, muscular, black man. He has dark brown skin. He looks no more muscular or less muscular than any other comic book guy back in that time period. But that's very important, and it'll come into play a little bit later. So as we go through this issue, this lesson, this episode, keep in mind that he's a tall, dark-skinned black man with 4C hair texture. He is a black man. Even if you can't like envision that, just as a shorthand, think of, I don't know, Morris Chestnut. With like, yeah, think of him. So Lobo started in Dell Comics. And this was in a two-issue series titled Lobo. This was back in December of 1965 and September of 1966. Now, the interesting thing with this character, or maybe with Dell Comics in general, is that those two comics, though December 65 and September 66, were also listed in Dell Comics, like in their history files backlog or whatever as number 12-439-512 and number 12-439-610. Now, I didn't find anything that gave any real clarity as to how and why they were numbering their comics this way. If you're someone who is in the comics industry, you just understand how that numbering works, please feel free to let me know. Use that hashtag CBNPod. I first assumed that because the first two sets of numbers are the same, that the 512 meant like May 12th, where the 610 maybe was June 10th. But I think I may be thinking a little bit too deep. So any of you blurs, nerds, comic aficionados out there who know why this is listed this way, let me know. Now, the character Lobo, we have him as being created by Dale editor and writer Don D.C. Arneson, A-R-N-E-S-O-N, Arneson, and artist Tony Tallarico. Now, this book chronicled the Old West adventures of a wealthy, unnamed African-American gunslinger named Lobo. Now, by the first issue's antagonist, they are the ones who gave him that name. And so, with me going through comics and looking at histories and, you know, having this contemporary 2024 lens that I'm looking through to discuss things, characters, and their histories, it's not lost on me that in media, things have changed over the years. Things are different now than they were in the 90s. So, of course, they're going to be different now from they were in the 60s and before. So some of Lobo's history is very odd. And I don't want to make any excuses for anyone, but I'm also like, is this just a sign of the times? Again, that doesn't make it right. I'm just saying, is that what this is? So with Lobo being an excellent marksman and being created by Don DJ Arneson and Tony Tallarico, and not seemingly have given himself the name, which I'm like, I could be maybe a little frustrated with that. But it's also like, it's a Western. Your name could be Johnny, and you terrorize everybody, got a scar on your face, so now everybody calls you the Scar Man. So, like, that's not a hill that I'm going to die on at this moment. But I was like, okay, well, the antagonist named him. He didn't name himself. Now, on the foreheads of his vanquished criminals, Lobo would leave his calling card. I'm going to give you a couple seconds to just guess what it is. You can hit me up with the hashtag CBNPod. You can yell it into your phone, into your car, wherever you're listening to this. But I'm going to give you a couple seconds for a Wild West character who has a signature calling card. What do you think that is? Do, 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 do. It is a gold coin that he would, I guess, press into the foreheads of the people he vanquished. And the print on the coin was the image of a wolf and the letter L. So not only is he whooping your butt, but he is mashing a coin into your forehead with enough force to leave the mark imprinted on your face of a wolf and the letter L. Can you imagine somebody getting a quarter, putting it on your forehead, and just punching the shit out of you until you have, like, what? So he was a bad mother something. So he would use that calling card, which was the wolf and the letter L. Now, this is where, well, Tallarico, the artist, in 2006, in a 2006 interview, said that he and Arneson co-created the character based on an idea and a plot by Tallarico, with Arneson scripting it. Now, this is going to sound familiar, kind of, sort of, to the for us Marvel fans. I'll say that. So he says, I had an idea for Lobo, and I approached DJ Arneson, and he brought it in and showed it to Dale editor-in-chief Helen Meyer. She loved it. She really wanted to do it. Great, so we did. We did the first issue, and in comics, you start the second issue as they're printing the first issue due to time limitations. All of a sudden, they stop the wagon. They stop production on the issue. They discover that as they were sending out bundles of comics out to distributors, that they were being returned unopened and couldn't figure out why. So they sniffed around, scouted around, and discovered that many sellers were opposed to Lobo, who was the first Black Western hero. That was the end of the book. It sold nothing. They printed 200,000 copies, and that was the going print rate. They sold also, I'm sorry, they printed 200,000 copies. That was the going print rate, and they sold, 10 to 15,000, which is unfortunate. So again, that was Tallarico, Tony Tallarico, the artist who gave that story in an interview. And it's, I don't know, it's just another kind of, not nail in the coffin, but it's just another reminder that life ain't been no crystal stair. Like, goddamn, you motherfuckers is returning this because this black Western hero is on the covers. Ugh, but it happened. Now, the reason why I say this is kind of sort of Marvel adjacent because this next interview by Arneson, DJ Arneson, the writer, in 2010 disputed that version of Lobo's creation. So again, as a quick recap, Tallarico said in 2006, look, we did the book, we ordered 200,000 copies, and they was being returned unopened because these publishers didn't want to see a black Western hero on the cover. Let's get into Arneson's. Let's see what he had to say. So he says, Tony Tallarico illustrated Lobo. He did not create the character. I did. He did not plot the storyline. I did. He did not write the script. I did. And he did not approach me with the original concept or idea. I developed the original premise for Lobo, which was originally called Black Lobo, a title that Helen Mayer, the editor-in-chief, rejected as inappropriate at the time from the book The Negro Cowboys by Philip Durham and Everett L. Jones. On reading the book in 1965, I recognized the potential for a black comic book hero based on historical fact. This is me, Rain Coleman, interjecting historical fact. Black cowboys existed. Black cowboys existed. It's just, but whatever. Okay, getting back to the quote. I added the other elements to the original Black Lobo character concept, i.e. Robin Hood and the Lone Ranger, etc., as well as the familiar adventurous spirit of the American cowboy of popular Western novels and cowboy movies of that time. Tony illustrated a mock-up cover, which was presented to Helen Mayer along with the proposal I wrote. Then I wrote the script and Tony illustrated the comic book from my script. I have no idea on what information or source Tony based his explanation for the discontinuation of Lobo. Sales were the primary basis for the continuation or discontinuation of a series title. I neither have now or did I have at that time any intimidation or suggestion that Lobo was discontinued because anyone was somehow conspiratorially opposed to it. End quote. Now, the funny thing here is that the girls are fighting. No, the funny thing here is that I got like Stanley, Steve Ditko vibes, not through the disagreement, but just having that whole issue being an issue. But even more interestingly enough, though these two stories seem to be very opposite of each other, kind of contradicting each other, I think the truth probably falls somewhere in the middle. And I, of course, put in like, I don't know, effect in the reading. I don't know if Arneson was like pissed off, but what I do know is that these two white guys created this character and they're giving their accounts of what happened and how it was discontinued or whatever else. And I think, again, the truth lies somewhere in the middle, because you can very well, regardless to who created the character and the mock-ups and this and that, when it comes to the actual sales, it could very well be true that, like you're saying, DJ Arneson, that the book didn't have the sales, but it can also at the same time be true that, like Tallarico said, folks didn't want to see no black cowboy on the cover of their comic. Like, that's not too far-fetched of an idea that both of these are true pieces of one whole. So I don't know, I just thought that was interesting that within, what was it, like a four-year time span, that these two conflicting interviews came out. And outside of the facts of the matter being that the book was discontinued, when it comes down to the who created what, that's also an interesting thing. And as a quick like aside, when you're dealing with folks and dealing with creativity, like we have different laws that can protect you, but you also got to protect yourself. But we're also talking about the 1960s and comics being a relatively ever-changing brand new medium. Like this is, it's always interesting seeing this. Even if you guys get a chance, look into the Image Comics and how that was created and the story there, if you don't already know it. But I just thought that was interesting. So Lobo, in later appearances, he was revived in 2017 in in 2017 in the comic books company called Indelible Comics, which is still has the Dell in it for Dell Publishing and Dell Comics. This was an all new popular comics number one. And in 2018, a Lobo novella was published in a collection entitled Fantastic Four in One. So the number four, the letter N, the number one. So Four in One, written by author David No, which is very interesting. And I saw a cover that was a contemporary cover of a Lobo book, but within looking at that particular cover, I couldn't tell right off the bat if that was like a fan cover, like someone who's a graphic artist who's just really good at being a graphic artist, or if that was the cover for that book. So I'll do a little bit more digging, and if I can find that issue or a link to it, I'll definitely put it in the show notes. But yeah, Lobo caused a bit of a stir to only have been around for two issues, which again is so interesting. So some accolades. In May of 2006, Tallarico was bestowed the East Coast Black Age of Comics Convention's Pioneer Award for Lifetime Achievement in recognition of his work on the first comic book to star an African American. He was an honoree in the reception dinner at the African American Museum in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Now, if we can look at the timeline, let's line this up. So Lobo came out in 1965 in December. He had his last second issue in September of 1966. So let's just say a whole year. Then years later in 2006, Tallarico does an interview discussing how him and Arneson created this character together, and that due to racism, the book didn't get more than two issues. 4 years later in 2010, we have an interview with Arneson pretty much saying that motherfucker's a liar. I did all this shit myself. He just illustrated it. And then if we jump back to 2006 in May, Tallarico received these awards. Now, nowhere did I see that Arneson, the writer, received that award either. That it was just Tallarico. So if we go back to those two interviews, I don't know if y'all got a little insight on it, let me know. But it seems like, if we are to believe for a second that Arneson is correct and he's the one who created everything, and Tallarico was just, and I say just in his defense, not because artists aren't important, but Tallarico was just the artist, then yeah, he'd probably be pissed off that you did this interview and then got this award for a character that he created. So yeah, that's I don't know. What do y'all think of that? What are your takeaways from that mess there? Or maybe he was just like, shit, I'm just tired of this motherfucker getting the credit and I'm gonna learn him something. So now we're going to switch gears and go into the Lobo of 1965, his first issue. Now this is where things get really interesting. So there is the spoiler for this comic that came out in the 1900s. So the last page of his first issue shows Lobo. It's a three panel page, and it shows Lobo and this like white man from behind. And Lobo is, and the guy speaking, and he says, "Remember, Lobo, you got a promise to keep for you and for me." Arr, I don't know what that's about. So the next panel is a close up of Lobo and his brown black skin with a tear running down his eye and his like bluish color eyes. The final frame is a silhouette of Lobo atop a mighty stallion on a cliff with the sun setting behind him. And it reads, "Thousands of men took part in the opening of the American West. Cowboys and ranchers, farmers and tradesmen, outlaws and gunmen. They all carved out a little piece of history and legends were made." In their own time, many weren't remembered at all, but some deserve the recognition they earned. Men like Lobo don't deserve to be forgotten, for they were here. So that's cool. Now, let's get into this, because again, my description of him was a dark-skinned black man, blue eyes, got his little hat on, cowboy hat, and little handkerchief. So Lobo in 1965, though created, now this is me pulling from that first issue. So though this was created and written by two white men, the comic Lobo claimed its place in history as the first comic starring an African-American following the conclusion of the Civil War. Former Union soldier Lobo moves to the West for a fresh start, but ends up framed for the robbery and murder of his cattle master due to his physical appearance. Which, let me stop right there. How many... whatever, I'll continue. Lobo is able to... run this back. Due to his physical appearance, Lobo is able to embody both black and white characteristics, yet his blackness ultimately defines his masculinity. Now, this is where I am a little kind of thrown off, because again, go back to my example. Lobo, let's just say, is a more chestnut stands in for him. Tall, over 6 foot, dark skin, muscular, handsome guy. Now, what I will say is comics back in the day did not have the full color palette that we have now, or it was not printed on the same type of paper that we have now. So you're going to have some limitations with coloring, with shading and all that. Now, this Lobo is a brown skinned man. I think it's very clear that he's a brown skinned man, even to the point where the white guy he's speaking to, though we're seeing him from over the shoulder and you can really only see his cheek and his left cheek and his left ear, those, it's clear that that is a white man. So going back to this description where it says, due to his physical appearance, Lobo is able to embody both black and white characteristics. That confused me a lot. I'm not going to hold you, because what I'm assuming is when you say for a comic in 1965, due to his physical appearance, he can embody both black and white. In my mind, in my African-American, black American mind, that does not conjure up the image of like a Morris Chestnut. To me, that's more of a fair-skinned black man who is light-skinned, dark enough to not be seen as white at first glance, but light enough that he could blend in. That's where my mind goes. And so I'm wondering if I'm correct, because that to me is very odd. And then I'm thinking that idea of complexion that I just recited, and also with the limited color palette of the 60s, because if they were to color him lighter, I would imagine he would just look like a white man. And so the idea of the African-American black man Lobo would not shine through. And so that's like my mind trying to make sense of it. But even with that kind of investigation rabbit hole that I went down, the fact that Arneson wanted to call the character Black Lobo to begin with, and he's just a dark skinned man, I don't know that the light skin theory that I have is correct. And so we go on to say that Lobo is able to embody both black and white characteristics, yet his blackness ultimately defines his masculinity. And that's what's so interesting to me as well. And I'd probably have to do a little bit more digging into history and maybe talk with folks who are a little bit more studied than I am about this. But when you say his blackness ultimately defines his masculinity, I guess my question is, what do you mean? Which is a very straightforward question, duh. But like, if his blackness is what defines his masculinity, what does that look like? Like in a real world practice in 1965, not on the comic pages, because we're emulating real humans. So if his blackness defines his masculinity, what does whiteness in men, what does that masculinity look like in 1965? Because this is, again, I don't know that I am fully equipped to like have an answer on my own, but those are the questions that were raised by these descriptions and even by looking at the issue. So in the climax of the first issue, when Lobo defeats his evil former colleagues, Lobo fails to save the man who has the knowledge that could free him of his wrongful accusations. Now, in the scene directly following this setback, Lobo looks candidly off into the distance, which this is the scene that I've discussed, candidly off into the distance, with a single tear flowing from his sparkling blue eyes and falls down his cheek. Now, let's stop there. Now, when I described him as having blue eyes before, that is, again, thinking about the limited color palette that you have with comics. So a lot of times you'll see, like, for example, think of like Archie comics. Veronica has black Raven hair. And so the highlights in her hair will be blue to show that that's dark black hair, where Betty, she has blonde hair and they're just using the color yellow. Archie has red hair, reddish orange, but they're using the color orange. If you look at older comics from the 60s, you'll see the same thing. Superman, yeah, you'll have maybe the white shine, but you'll also have that blue in there. So when I saw his blue eyes initially, I'm thinking this is just a black man with black eyes and you're using the blue. Because again, limited color palette. But no, they're stating here that yes, this is a black man with blue eyes. Now, that's not unheard of course. Everybody can have any, you know, eye color type. Like, that's not lost on me. Now, this article continues to say that the illustrator's choice to draw Lobo with blue eyes is highly significant. While black people may genetically inherit blue eyes through a mutation, it is more likely to occur as a result of interracial mingling. So again, everything I just said, the blue eyes, the interracial mingling, the masculinity, his blackness, defining his masculinity, and then looking at the character with the limited color palette of the 60s, I'm thinking this man was probably supposed to be a light-skinned black man. Not to say that you can't have an interracial relationship or interracial sexual relationship where one person is white, one person is black, and the baby not come out looking like a dark-skinned black person. It is possible, but it's just some of these words are like key indicators that in my mind is cluing me into, this is supposed to be a black, light-skinned man. This is supposed to be a racially ambiguous man. And y'all walk with me. Like, if you think that I'm just incorrect, that's fine. But, like, let me know. Because when I read through this, again, all of these telltale signs seem to point to he should be much lighter. But again, if you made this character lighter with the 1960s color palette, he's not going to read as a black man. He's going to look just like a white person, which is ultimately going to kind of defeat the purpose of what you're trying to do at that time, which is have the first African-American Western led comic. So I don't know. This is so interesting looking at this story through this contemporary 2024 lens. Now, the introduction of the blue eyes poses the reader to question the authenticity of Lobo's blackness by implying that he may be partially white. So what comes to mind when I'm looking through this is Imitation of Life. Spoiler for Imitation of Life. If you ain't seen it, that's another old ass movie. But in Imitation of Life, in short, there is a black woman who is the kind of nanny housekeeper of this white family that had, it's a woman and her daughter. I think they had a dad as well. They would have had a dad. And so the black maid lady, her daughter is white passing. This is her daughter she gave birth to, but they look as different as Monique giving birth to Anya Taylor-Joy. That's what they look like. And so through the movie, she's white passing in a way that's not just, oh, you're kind of ambiguous. What, you could be a mix of anything. No, this looked like a white woman. And so it's her, the movie is her running away from her blackness. And I'm not going to come down on like critique of the movie and who should feel what and this, that, and the third. I'm just straight facts. She's running away from her blackness because she doesn't like being black. There's a moment where she was in high school dating this guy who I'm assuming was like a football player or something. I haven't seen a movie in a while. But when he found out that she had Negro blood in her, he smacked the shit out of her. And so ultimately the movie ends after her mom kind of went and sought her out because the girl left, became like a go-go dancer, did a bunch of shit. Her mama showed up at her job. She was ignoring her or not claiming her. Ultimately, the mom died, and the girl was crying bloody murder all over that damn funeral because she was like, oh, God, why? Why did you take my mama? All that being said, that's what comes to mind when I read through the history and background of this character. Let's assume that I'm 100% correct. Let's assume that my assumption that this should be was intended to be a lighter skinned black man is correct. And they were limited at the color palette, so they made him darker because making him lighter would make him look white. That would make 1965 be like the reverse contemporary? Because, you know, in comics now, we are constantly running to the issue where people are whitewashing our dark-skinned black characters. And not even just black, like other races as well. But our Storm has, they do their best to take that woman from a deep, rich brown to Zendaya all day long. Like, they be trying it. And when we give them pushback, it's like, why you motherfuckers mad? Alexandra Shipp was Storm. Halle Berry was Storm. Love Halle Berry down. She should have never been Storm. Like, what are you talking about? So I'm saying, it seems like in 1965, that was less progressive. They were, if what I am saying is correct, they were actually doing the work. Wow. Today, they're not doing the work. So I don't know. I just thought that was interesting. So yeah, this character is so, history is so wild. Now, while this could be an attempt at whitewashing Lobo with the idea that Lobo's blackness makes that he could be partially white, they go on to say that his interracial nature makes practical sense because it allows for both black and white viewers to take pleasure and identify with aspects of Lobo. That is where I am going to stop with that bullshit. So, with, okay, but again, I'm keeping in mind that this is 1965, but what's odd to me is that there is this interracial component that is like pushed out where they're trying to point to like physical markers, like his blue eyes. And then again, thinking that you only have so many colors in 65 to convey this is a black person, and putting this interracial identity on him so that you can grab both black and white readers. When speaking from a black American perspective, and again, even realizing this is 1965, that should not have to be the case. And that's what we're seeing a lot today in media when it comes to these movies and these books and shit. It's like, hell, look at the Magical Negro movie discourse. Like, you, instead of just making a movie, and we'll get too deep into it, that is about black people at a wizarding school or dealing with magical powers, now it's this backdoor rom-com of like, look at blacks in this servitude role of the Magical Negro. Look how funny this is. Okay, girl, sure. But the idea that you have to make him interracial so that black and white people can want to read him is like, ugh, this is weird. Now, that hasn't changed. We're still dealing with that to this fucking day. But either way, I think that Lobo is an interesting and very important character. And everything we do now is built off the backs of the things that come before us. Nothing under the sun is new. Even if you have this new, great, innovative idea, it still is coming from years, decades, centuries of things before it. So I'm not too frustrated, but I am a little slightly annoyed, but still happy that this character exists, even with all the kind of unclearness surrounding him, because that we have that now with contemporary characters. Hell, look at Bishop, Lucas Bishop, who has been going back and forth between being Aboriginal black and a like black American, like African American black. And that's all because, let's not get started there. What I'm saying is, even with all the frustrations, and not really frustrations, that's not the best word for it, but even with the inconsistencies that are with Lobo, I'm actually, now that I'm kind of sitting with it and thinking it through, I'm not as upset, frustrated, or annoyed at the inconsistencies with Lobo for a few reasons. One, there's only two issues of him proper, like in proper original canon. I'm not going to include everything after September of 66 right now. Because the run is so limited, and because of what I discovered about the character through doing the research, what I'm finding is these descriptions about his eye color and what this could mean for this, that, and the third, but those aren't things that are explicitly stated in the text. And so I think this is a good thing, because he has a short enough run that does not explicitly state this is interracial, his eyes are blue because there is slavery, but there is interracial blood in his bloodline, that is why he looked this way. Like, the explanation of like making him interracial so that black and white people can enjoy him is not explicitly stated in the text of the story. So because we do have only these two issues and we have what we see on the page, it's up for interpretation in a way that I think is easier to digest and like make it your own because the run is so limited versus, let's say, like Ilyana and Kitty having a sapphic love affair that's subtext for years in comics. Well, yeah, that's years, and you can pick out this, then the third, and everybody can argue about whatever else. But with Lobo, it is explicitly stated in these two issues, this is the story we're getting. And a lot of this discourse that we would have about him would be contemporary discourse based off of all that we've viewed and observed throughout the year. So if in your mind it makes more sense that, yeah, Lobo is biracial and he maybe should be a little lighter, or he should be a little darker, or I can see that, you know, the blue eyes is from beyond, whatever the case may be, I think because that run is so limited, it lends itself more to the imagination of the viewer. Like if you read a book and it's just one book, one novel, and there's not four or five other installments, and it's just this book, and in the ending, the team of five slayed the dragon and they won the kingdom and the sun set. You can then in your mind decide, oh, and I bet after that they all went on more adventures. Or you can decide, and that was the end, and they just lived a calm life running a shop. Like, so I think that, I don't know what the word or the term or phrase is for that, but this idea of just, this is the thing that happened. Now the artist handed off to you, the consumer, you decide. But yeah, so that's what I think about. That's why I don't think I'm as frustrated or angry as I would be if this would have happened like 2021 or something. Purity of his blackness being called into question, the presence of Lobo's blackness cannot help but bring a sense of hypermasculinity to the character, because the black male body is already culturally ascribed as a site of hypermasculinity. Now that is interesting as well, because again, I've said it several times already, but I go back to his complexion that cannot be ignored in this conversation. And if we are working off the assumption that there is a limited color palette and he should be lighter, and then also hold true the fact that he is quite literally darker than the other white men in this book, and you're talking about his blackness as being the thing that ascribes his masculinity, then what does that look like? What does a dark-skinned black man's masculinity look like in 1965? What does a lighter-skinned black man's masculinity look like in 1965? And what does a white man's masculinity look like in 1965? These are all important ideals that you'd have to kind of hold in your mind when looking over this Lobo character. Now, Lobo will always be rendered as hypermasculine. This is what they're stating. Due to Lobo's blackness, the single tear can easily be Lobo's deployment of the cool pose. This is defined as a coping mechanism and strategy for many black males against exploitation. The cool pose allows black men to conceal the rage of being unable to be in control, while also reinforcing stereotypes of black masculinity. Although Lobo's final chance to prove his innocence died with the death of the man with the knowledge to save him, the single tear is the only emotion that he is able to show. The one tear holds all of Lobo's anguish and frustration over his permanent outlaw status, and this portrayal of Lobo's hardness fortifies the emotional detachment and aloofness stereotyped of the black masculinity, which, again, I don't have all of the required knowledge to be able to go in depth about that in a specific day and age of 1965, but I can consider the way that black men and blackness has been used throughout the years since. I'll even say a modern day version of a Lobo would be not an outlaw from the Wild West, but some black man that is deemed to be a thug, which is the word that they like to throw around a lot, but having that contemporary outlaw status and seeing this same story of this black man who could be have interracial blood in him, or could just be a black man without who's monoracial. I could see that played out today, and I can reference like the way that dark-skinned black men, light-skinned black men, and white men are all discussed when it comes to like prison sentencing, when it comes to how they're described in the media when it comes to a crime. For example, if we look at a dark-skinned man, and though not a man, look at Trayvon Martin and the way that his case played out, and countless other brown, dark-skinned boys who, when are faced with either having done a crime, actually done a crime or not, or be the victims of said institution, when the videos and photos of them that are being placed in the news and the media is to deem them guilty in the public of the court of public opinion. But then you'll have, let's say, for example, what was the guy? I forget the description of him. That light-skinned mixed guy who was the prison bay, that fair light-skinned dude with them light eyes, and his mugshot like took over and he got a modeling contract and all that. Like, look at that. Look at that stark difference. And then even look at when a white man shoots up his family or drives off of a cliff. And this is not funny, but then the image is like this family photo that they did at Christmas. Like, oh, Joe Hansen was such a great guy, and you know, he took a, I don't know, C. Ellis, and then he went on a rampage. Poor him. Like, no, girl, he killed his family. Use the same damn type of photos. But all that being said, I can draw parallels to how black men of different complexions and white men are treated in the media today when it comes to the court of law, and infer through, you know, idea of like civil rights and American history what a black man would face in the 60s, in 1965, and even in the Wild West, in the West. So, I don't know. All in all, this was a interesting kind of walk down memory lane or so. And let me know what your thoughts are. Like, anything that I've said this episode, like, if it sparks some sort of conversation, have that with me. Use that hashtag CBNPod. Hit me up on Twitter, of course, Carefree Blurred. TikTok, Carefree Blurred. IG and YouTube, Carefree Black Nerd. Or if you want to email me, carefreeblacknerd@gmail.com. Like, this is Lobo. He's that guy. He's that guy. I'm going to try to find a novella of his and that 2017 issue in that Fantastic Four, in that 4-in-1 here. I'm trying to look up that. But let me know, what are your guys' thoughts on Lobo, about black cowboys, which existed? Do you have any insight as to the comic book industry of the 60s? If you're maybe a person of a certain age who maybe was a kid around that time, you have some insight to give me, please do that. I would love to get some feedback from you guys. And while you're listening, and since you've made it this far, please be sure to rate and review the podcast. Yeah, let's bring that back to those iTunes and that Spotify, and hit them likes and hearts on SoundCloud. I almost said Squarespace. This episode is brought to you by but no, let me know. So again, my name is Ryan Coleman. I am the Carefree Black Nerd. I am excited to talk with you guys. This was a fun issue, and we're gearing up for all things great and good for 2024. So let me know your thoughts, ideas, and all that good stuff. And until next time, stay carefree, stay nerdy, stay geeky, and stay aware that this ain't it. Don't hold on.